We're in the season of the church year known as Epiphany, a season that begins with the story of Magi seeing a star that led them to Bethlehem, and that continues through the story of disciples seeing their teacher transfigured on a mountaintop. In between are a variety of other stories. Stories that tell about the epiphany of God and what it reveals. Stories that show how this epiphany can trigger a radical shift in values and bring about a reorientation of life. Stories that invite us to consider what it might mean to allow God's reality to define and guide us. Today's Epiphany story focuses on a familiar character, Jonah. But today's story isn't about Jonah's famous run-in with a big fish after the prophet ran from God's call to go to Nineveh. In today's story, we find Jonah receiving a second chance. God again calls him to go to Nineveh, and this time Jonah goes. He travels to the capital of Assyria, Israel's deadly enemy. And when he arrives, he proclaims a simple sentence. 40 days more, and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Then, at least in my imagination, Jonah sits down and waits for the destruction to come. God has said the people of Nineveh will be punished, and Jonah's ready to see them get what they deserve. But there's a twist in the story, something Jonah never saw coming. The people of Nineveh believed God. The reading doesn't say they believed Jonah or his message. It says they believed God. One scholar notes that the verb believe here does not suggest any faith in Yahweh, but that the people of Nineveh accepted the threat as a true and valid one. They believed that Yahweh meant what was said. And because the people take the threat seriously, they take action. To show the God of Israel just how serious they are about changing, they begin the ancient ritual of declaring a fast and putting on sackcloth. And they do it in a big way. Everyone, from the smallest person to the largest, and even all the animals, everyone wears sackcloth and stops eating and drinking. Jonah's message never invited any response from the people. In fact, nothing in the story to this point has even remotely indicated that the people of Nineveh might be spared. But the king of Nineveh asks one of the biggest questions possible. Who knows? If we fast and wear sackcloth, if we cry to God, if we turn from the evil we've done and stop our violence, who knows? Maybe, just maybe, God's mind will change. Maybe, just maybe, God's anger will stop. And maybe, just maybe, we won't be destroyed. After all, who knows? By asking that question, the king of Nineveh entertains what one writer describes as the daring theological option that human action can impinge on God and cause God to alter the terrible decree, that God has freedom to act in an alternative way. The king of the awesome Gentile city of Nineveh proposes that Yahweh is not a closed principle of fate, an uncaring tyrant, but rather a live subject who can and will engage in freedom as Yahweh's partner in judgment repents and changes. And that's what happens. God sees what the people of Nineveh are doing and how they're changing, and God decides not to punish them. God doesn't become a prisoner to what's been announced or what's expected. Instead, God chooses to respond with grace, giving these people the chance to live in a new way. It's good news, right? The kind of news any prophet would welcome and embrace. Well, not quite. If we read a bit further in Jonah's story, we find a different response to God's forgiveness. Jonah stomps off. He's furious. And he complains to God, "I knew this would happen. It's why I never wanted to come here. I knew that you would act out of grace and mercy and love, and that you're willing to let people off the hook. If that's the way things are, I'd rather be dead." How different Jonah's response is from that of the king of Nineveh. While the king was willing to risk everything in hopes of a different future, Jonah wants nothing to change. He has a fixed view of the world, of other people, even of God. The words, "who knows," will never tumble from his lips. The problem is that God's vision is different. God desires a different reality for our world, a reality in which each person has value, a reality in which love and forgiveness are available to everyone, a reality in which change is always possible. What about us? If we're honest, do we trust in God's vision? Or are we more likely to share Jonah's view? Are there places in our lives or in our world where we don't believe change is possible or perhaps even desirable? Places that feel beyond hope. I'm not sure T.J. Turner had much hope for Afghanistan when, as a member of our Air Force, he was deployed to Bagram Airfield. The area around Bagram in northern Afghanistan is filled with extremes. It's both ruggedly beautiful and desperately poor. Its peacefulness and serenity are punctuated with unbelievable violence and the scars of decades of conflict. It's an area where landmines coexist with children playing in the fields. One day, while driving back to the airfield with his unit, TJ noticed the destruction left from Afghanistan's years of conflict. He saw the damaged houses and the damaged bodies of people. He also saw despair written on the people's faces. It occurred to him that this is what hell is like. Not a place that's destroyed, but hope that's destroyed. He saw that loss of hope in the faces he passed. That is, except for the kids. The kids still played, and their faces were alive rather than deadened by despair. They were the hope amid the hell. TJ's unit approached an old man and a boy whom TJ guessed was the man's grandson. The old man heard the vehicles coming and pulled the child in close. The man's expression seemed hostile, but maybe it was just the snow and the cold. As the vehicle slowed down to pass, TJ held a bright blue teddy bear out the window. He remembers feeling bad that the bear was so bright, more of a girl's teddy bear than a boy's. But the little boy didn't care. He grabbed the bear and hugged it with both arms. The old man looked right at TJ and said, "Tasha Kerr, thank you." TJ watched the pair until they disappeared around a bend. The child was still hugging that bear, and there was a look on the old man's face. Maybe it was just a smile, but to TJ, it looked more like hope. Hope that his grandson wouldn't live in the same world he did. TJ realized that was his hope as well. TJ returned to the States after serving 9 months in Afghanistan. He began volunteering for an NGO that aids civilian war victims, and he hopes to return to Afghanistan. In reflection, he notes, "I hear lots of talk in our nation about the global war on terror, and my opinions evolve with that debate. However, we seem to miss the root cause. Hell is what causes terrorism. It's about pure desperation and feeling like there's no way of recovering the hope of childhood. I'm not saying that we'll be able to win this conflict with teddy bears alone, but when I deploy next, I'm packing a bag full of them just in case." When it comes to bringing about transformative change, handing out teddy bears may seem about as promising as Jonah's muttering a few words of judgment when he walked into Nineveh. But maybe we, along with Jonah, forget that it's God who's the author of hope. Time and again, God offers a story of hope, one filled with the possibility of love and mercy, of second chances and change. God longs for us to embrace that story, just as a small boy in Afghanistan embraced a bright blue teddy bear. Embracing that story of hope may help us release something else, the certainty to which we may be tempted to cling. Certainty that can make us feel more secure in confusing or chaotic times. Certainty that places an emphasis on answers rather than questions. Certainty that we may confuse with faith. It's the kind of certainty that dominated Jonah's life and drove his reactions to the world, to other people, to God. The kind of certainty that prevented him and perhaps us from asking, "Who knows?" Authors often have a 2 or 3 sentence biographical blurb that's used in a variety of ways. on the back of a book cover or inside a dust jacket, at the end of an essay or the beginning of a press release, on a website or Facebook page. Here's how such a blurb begins for the author of one of the best pieces of writing I've read in the past few years. Josh Hanegarny believes in curiosity, questions, and strength. The theme of curiosity and the strength questions can provide runs throughout Josh's memoir, The World's Strongest Librarian. Josh is indeed a librarian. He's also strong, thanks to the training he does in gyms in his backyard. It also doesn't hurt that he's 6'7" tall and weighs 260 pounds. But this beautifully written memoir is about so much more than those descriptive facts. With inspiring honesty and remarkable charm, Josh writes about growing up in a Mormon family with both a love of books and an extreme case of Tourette's syndrome. Josh's parents are ever present in his memoir. He portrays each as funny, strong, and very human. He describes his mother, a devout Mormon, not as a grim, true believer, but instead as someone who feels that God directs her to be joyful. Although his father converted to Mormonism in order to marry his mom, Josh points to the disparity between his parents' devotion to the church. My dad was faithful enough that my mom wouldn't regret marrying him, but his priorities swung more toward naps than pious service. Perhaps the most important gift Josh's parents gave him was encouraging his curiosity. He writes that his parents had a knack for making everything into a game. Learning was a reward. And when I came home from school, instead of asking, "How was school today?" they would ask, "What did you ask today?" They also nurtured his love of libraries, where his curiosity found the space to bloom and grow. As he recalls, the library taught me that I could ask any questions I wanted and pursue them to their conclusions without judgment or embarrassment. And it's where I learned that not all questions have answers. His parents' encouragement of his curiosity also helped Josh when doubt almost permanently overtook faith in his life. When he shared his uncertainty with his mother and his bishop, he was surprised that both were willing to listen and respond with care and kindness rather than judgment and dogma. In summing up his spiritual journey, Josh writes, "In the mission field, people who are open to hearing the message are called investigators. I suspect that I'll spend my entire life investigating. I'm open to listening, to reading, to studying the scriptures, and to pondering what is taught by this church or any other." Curiosity in the place of certainty. An openness to listening, to reading, to studying scriptures, to pondering what's taught. A willingness to spend our lives investigating and asking questions. Imagine how different Jonah's life might have been had he been willing to ask questions. Not just who knows, but such questions as, "If God is gracious and merciful and loving, who should I be? If God is capable of changing and forgiving, how should I respond? If God is willing to see people in the world in a new way, what should I do? As we travel through this season of Epiphany, may those be our questions as well. And may hope and curiosity help us remain open to when and where and how we receive revelations of God. After all, who knows? Amen.